is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Crystal Robinson, former WNBA player and coach, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are currently a week away from the start of the NBA regular season. We are looking forward to that here on the Hoopheads pod. And tonight we thought we would do something that we haven't really done before. I think we've done tiers, but never identified and labeled the tiers as we're going to do tonight. And we're going to go through each one of the teams.
I think we jokingly did like a few times. We would just come up with like these, like we would just say contenders, pretenders, and then like terrible teams or something. I don't even remember what we called them, but this is going to be kind of fun. I'm really excited to, when you came up with this idea today, Mike, so I like it.
Yeah, we put some labels on the tiers, and I think we have, what do we have, 6 tiers? Is that right?
We have 6 tiers. Before we start, Mike, would you say that your tiers are pretty evenly split? Would you say there's more teams in a specific spot than you, like, overall?
My highest tier has 6, and my lowest tier has 4.
Okay, so mine are pretty even.
7, okay.
I have 7 in one of my tiers.
All right.
And I have 4 in three of my tiers, I have 4.
Okay, all right. So we should have some disagreements or at least some interesting discussion points based upon where we slot these different teams and within the tiers. Do you want to read the tiers or do you want me to read the tiers?
I think you are the one that came up with the tiers, so I want you to read the tiers.
Okay, let's do that. So do we start at the – well, we're going to start when we actually go through the tiers. We're going to start at the bottom, but I'm going to start at the top for the tiers, so with the top teams. So our first tier is we can win the title. So these are teams that we believe actually can win the NBA title. Our second tier, we think we can win the title, but it's not happening. Our third tier, if all goes well, we can make the conference finals. Our fourth tier – we think we can host a play-in game. Our fifth tier, we're not tanking yet. And our last tier, play bad for the French lad. And we'll get some Wembanyama talk when we get to that final tier, which is going to be the first tier as we move from the bottom to the top. So, Jay, I'll let you lead it off with play bad for the French lad. Who you got in that tier?
All right. Well, so am I just going to name? I'll name all my teams. Does that make
yes.
the most sense?
Yes. Name them all.
Okay. So I have the Spurs.
Yes.
I have the Jazz.
Yes.
I have the Thunder.
Yes.
I have the Pacers.
No.
Oh, I.
Go ahead. Continue.
And then the last one I have is the Rockets.
Okay. So there's 4. I think there's four no-brainers, and I can certainly see where Indiana would be in this tier. I didn't put him there. Here's why. I'll tell you why.
Rick Carlisle, is that the only reason?
No. Here's why. So I think when you look at Indiana, what does everybody say Indiana is going to be doing here within the next weeks, months?
Trading Miles Turner.
Correct. And most likely Buddy Hield. So right now, if you look at the roster that they have and you look at the lineup that they can put out on the floor, if you have Turner and you have Hield and you have Halliburton and you have Mathurin and you have Chris Duarte, they have the makings of what could be, and not a team that is going to be threatening to make the playoffs.
It's a pesky team.
But those are five credible NBA players that, when you look at these other teams at the bottom, are not nearly as bad. And so I think I move them up one tier because the next tier says we're not tanking yet. And so I think it's just a matter of time before Indiana is in fact tanking. But I don't think that right now, where their roster is, that they're in full-on tank mode the way these other four teams are. Clearly, the Rockets, Thunder, Spurs, and Jazz, none of those teams is at all interested in winning. I think Oklahoma City would have been interested in winning had Chet not gotten hurt. And I think the Rockets, their young guys are going to be trying to compete and trying to win. But I think as a franchise, they certainly believe that they're going to be better off if they can lose and get Wembanyama or get Scoot or get whoever they end up getting in the draft to add to Jabari and Jalen Green and the other pieces that they've been able to put together to this point. The Jazz, fire sale, 13 number one draft picks. Clearly, they're going to probably do more and trade more as the season goes along. I wouldn't be surprised if, come the trading deadline, that you see Mike Conley shipped out, you see Jordan Clarkson shipped out. So Utah is clearly tanking.
Well, he loves to shoot.
What's that?
He loves to shoot.
Jordan Clarkson, he loves to shoot. That's correct. My daughter, one of her favorite quotes, that Jordan Clarkson, when he was with the Cavs, he loves to shoot. He did not like to pass, and he still does not. And then the Spurs, who may very well be the worst team in the league. And they have some decent players, but I think just when you look at their roster, the thing that they're missing is a guy who can playmake for them and create offense for other guys. And they're just going to struggle to score. And it can be a long season for Pop and company. I'm surprised a little bit that Pop has decided to continue on with the process, but he's a guy who's a coaching lifer. And maybe he'll be around to see the next iteration of Tim Duncan if the lottery balls fall right for the Spurs next spring. Who knows? And maybe maybe Wembanyama's the guy.
So do you have anyone else in that tier, or are those the only four that you have?
No, I have Rockets, Thunder, Jazz, Spurs in that tier.
Okay. I just said Pacers because I just feel like they're the worst team in the Eastern Conference. That's why I put them there.
No, I agree. And I think I debated that one back and forth. And I would say that even though they're in the not tanking yet category, they're certainly going to slip down. If we redo the tiers at midseason, I don't think there's any doubt that Indiana's going to be down in that final tier. But as they stand right now today, because they haven't made that Miles Turner trade or that Buddy Hield Miles Turner trade, I think that's why I bumped them up one category. So that's where I'm at with that.
So I guess let's talk about the prize here. The prize.
Yep.
Dude, the guy's a freak, man. Like, I just watching him play, like, I had heard about him and I really hadn't seen anything, but man, I don't know if is this an insult. He's goofy looking. He's just like, but
you can't help but be goofy looking at 7'4". You can't. I mean, there's no way you're not going
to
look.
I'm not saying he's like just goofy to look at, but he's goofy looking because he's a guy that's standing 3 feet behind the arc, jacking up threes and making them, and like looking like he's a functional. And when he was like handling the ball, he surely didn't look like a 7'4" guy. Like, really impressive and to see. Like, my biggest thing is this, Mike. Like, yes, he's once again looking like this awesome prospect, and people are, listen, I'm not comfortable saying this guy is like going to be better than LeBron. Some people are throwing that out there. He's the best prospect. He's better a prospect than LeBron was. Okay. Yes, I get it. Like, the hype is real, understandable, but Have we ever seen a 7'4" guy in the NBA that has not been injury prone?
No, like, that's a great point.
I'm not ready to say that he's LeBron. Okay, let's calm down. I know that these places and these podcasts and these shows have to have a hot take per minute. I get it, but I just don't feel comfortable saying like that kind of thing right now. Like that's not something I feel good about.
All right, so there's two things, and I think you hit on both points. The first one is that this guy is doing things at 7'4" in these two games that we watched. And granted, he's not doing it against NBA competition. He's doing it against G League competition. But he's doing things on the basketball floor in terms of his movement, in terms of his ability to shoot the ball, in terms of his athleticism at 7'4". We just haven't seen guys that can move in this way and shoot the ball the way he can. It hasn't existed. So from a skill set standpoint, from the fact that he has an 8-foot wingspan and he has what appears to be really good timing blocking shots, which I don't know how good your timing has to be when you have an 8-foot wingspan, but he has a knack for being able to be in the right place defensively and block shots, and the movement offensively in terms of where his feet are and his balance and the types of shot making that he showed in those two games. It's unlike anything we've ever seen from a player that size. And although he's skinny, he's not, I don't want to say freakishly skinny, where you don't look at him and go, that's a guy who could never put on weight. Now, is he ever going to be 7'4", 300 pounds? I don't think so. But could he put on another 30, 40 pounds? He looks like a guy who is... He looks like a high school player, like a high school basketball player, a skinny high school basketball player, but a high school basketball player nonetheless. Whereas a lot of the guys that we think of as being number one picks and worthy of that spot, guys like LeBron, who are built like adult men when they're 15, 16 years old, he clearly doesn't fit that. He looks like a kid in terms of the way his body is put together right now. But he also looks like somebody who is going to be able to put on a little bit of weight. And unlike a guy like, let's say, Sean Bradley or even Chet, like I don't think Chet's going to be putting on 60 pounds of muscle over the course of his NBA career. Whereas this guy looks like his frame could probably support that kind of weight gain. Now, he's never, again, like I said, he's not going to be huge, but if he could become where he's more normally proportioned, or he just continues to fill out the way a normal person does who's a 6'6 or 6'7 high school player, then you have something that you just haven't had before. And then the second point that you made was about guys who are this tall that have been able to stay healthy. And I don't know if you read, did you read Kevin O'Connor's article on The Ringer?
I did not,
about,
Mike.
Okay, so.
I'm a little busy. I don't really have time to sit and read articles, Mike.
I understand. Okay, so I thought the point that you brought up, I think, was a really good one. And as I was watching the highlights of those games and watching him play, what immediately pops into your mind is, okay, what other guys have had a similar frame, and then how many of them have been effective, and for how long have they been effective? So Kevin O'Connor did the research for us, so thank you. Here's what he said. There have been 26 players in NBA history listed at 7'3" or taller. Only 7 of them have had noteworthy careers. So here are the 7. You want to guess any of them?
7'4".
7'3" or taller.
7'3" or taller. Well, I mean, does Manute Bol count?
No, he's not listed on here. I'm assuming noteworthy means guys who are actually impactful on real teams and real minutes, not sort of the sideshow Bob nature of Manute.
Oh, I mean, I don't think Shaq was 7'3", right?
No. One of them...
Yao Ming?
Yao Ming. Hmm. One of them's from the former Soviet Union.
Former Soviet Union. Well, it's... What?
What? Okay, we'll skip that one. One of them was a twin tower with Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh man, that's really
went to University of Virginia.
That's not gonna help me.
All right, Ralph Sampson.
Oh yeah, I wasn't getting that one.
Former Soviet Union, Arvydas Sabonis.
Oh, Sabonis. You could have said his son was in the league.
I guess that's true. The Dunking Dutchman, Rick Smits.
Rick Smith. Detlef Schrempf on this list?
No, Detlef was only like 6'10".
Who was on their team? There was someone that was tall on that team. Anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. From the Utah Jazz.
Gobert.
Bearded guy.
Oh, kinda Greg Ostertag?
No, Mark Eaton.
Oh, another
guy currently plays for the Wizards.
Dwight Howard? No.
Oh my gosh.
Guy who plays for the Wizards currently?
Yeah, Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh, he doesn't. No, come on now. Wait a second. You're telling me he's been more impactful than Manute Bol was? I don't believe that.
Well, not from a notoriety standpoint, probably, but as far as impact on the floor. All right, there's one more. Former Cleveland Cavalier.
Oh, Ilgauskas?
Big Z, yep. Okay. So those are your seven. And then he goes on to say, of that list, only Smits and Eaton didn't miss significant time or portions of their career, but neither of them faced the demands on both ends of the floor that the others did, or that Wembanyama will once he reaches the NBA. So in other words, Eaton and Smits were bit players on offense, I guess is mostly what he's trying to say there, whereas those other guys were more of the focal point of an offense or second fiddle or whatever it might be. So basically, if you're thinking that Wembanyama is going to be a guy who's going to play 15 years in the league at a very high level two ways and be an impactful defender and be a guy that you can run your offense through, you're basically getting into unprecedented territory for a guy doing that and having a long career. I will say, the way he moves doesn't look like a guy who's 7'4". He definitely looks odd out there, but part of it is just because we haven't seen a guy who's 7'4 move in that way and do the things that he's done. But I think the caveat in all this, right, is the injury piece. And there's no way to know. There's no way to predict. But if you were to extrapolate out what this guy does, what his skill set is at his size, you can certainly make a case that from a potential and from a just wide-ranging ability that he probably is the best prospect since LeBron, but you got to keep him healthy. And so I don't think that's going to dissuade, let's put it this way, his health is not going to dissuade any of these teams from tanking hard, because what we saw this week in Vegas is that this guy is going to change a team if he stays healthy. He's going to change a team's fortune for the next 10 years if he's healthy. And teams are not going to pass up on the opportunity to go get this guy, as we'll continue to talk about as we move up the tiers. So let's move on to tier two.
Let's move to tier. All right. We got five more tiers to go, Mike. So tier two, not tanking. So you already said you have the Pacers.
Whoa, not tanking yet.
Oh, you are said you have the Pacers there.
Okay. I have the Pacers.
Okay, why don't
there.
You share the other teams that you have there?
Okay, so I have in that tier, I have the Pistons. I have the Magic.
Yeah, I have the... Go ahead, I have the Magic.
I have the Wizards. And I have the Hornets.
I only have the Magic and the Hornets in that list.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about those two teams. We've already kind of talked about Indy. So we have Magic and the Hornets not tanking yet. So my thought on the Magic is, like, when we did our over-under, I picked the Magic to go over, which could indicate that maybe they're not going to tank, or at least at that point I thought maybe they're not going to tank. But Orlando's a team that could be better than people think. I think it depends on how Banchero plays and whether or not he's able to be a functional hub of their offense. They do have, as we talked about before, they have some nice pieces. And Franz Wagner, you've got Suggs, who unfortunately got injured, and who knows how long he'll be out with that knee injury. And Fultz is coming back from the toe. And Jonathan Isaac, we're still waiting on him to come back. So who knows, Wendell Carter, who knows what's going to happen with all these guys that they have, but potentially they could be a team that could be better than people think. But as you get down to the end and you see, oh man, we're not going to make the play-in, or we're close, does it really matter if we get to play one game in the play-in tournament, or would it be better for us just to shut Banchero down and lose our last 10 games in a row? So I think Orlando could be better than people think, but I won't be surprised if by the end of the season they are in full tank mode. And then the Hornets, I mean, I just that's a franchise that I just don't know what their direction is. What are they trying to do? Obviously, the Miles Bridges situation really hurts them. He was their second best player. And LaMelo, it feels like, as we talked about before, that the shine has kind of come off LaMelo's game. There was a lot of talk in his first year and even into his second year that Charlotte had finally landed a guy that could be the cornerstone of a franchise. And it feels like as last season wore on, you started to hear people raise more and more doubts about whether or not LaMelo could be that guy, that he might just be a fun guy to have on your team, but maybe not the guy that can lead your franchise to an actual winning situation. And so without Miles Bridges and with what else they have, Charlotte seems like a prime candidate where they're going to be in the 12, 11, 13 slot somewhere there in the Eastern Conference come late February, early March. And I could definitely see them being a team that shuts it down. So I think them and Orlando are both in that tier for that reason, that I just think that they're not going to be solidly in the play-in. If anything, they're going to be fighting for it. And I think those teams that are fighting for the play-in are going to have they're going to have a lot of second thoughts about whether or not that's the right way to go.
All right. Well, so I have those teams, and pretty much everything that you said comes true. The other two teams that I have in this tier, Mike, and one of them I think you probably have on the host. Both of them, I think.
So we have different. So you, that wasn't you. You didn't only have three. So you have two different teams than what I have in here.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So
now, let's, and my rationale, right, my rationale for the first team is purely because they can't get anyone to come to their city.
Okay. Let's hear it.
The New York Knicks.
Okay. So I had the Knicks. I had the Knicks a step above. I had them. We think we can host a play-in game.
Listen, here's what they're going to see. They're going to see they have no chance in the East. They're going to see that the play-in tournament is a waste of their time. They see Wembanyama guy. I can't even say his name. That the alien guy.
Wemby. Just call him Wemby.
Wemby. The French lad.
Or Victor.
Yeah. They see this guy that they could have and could market him in New York City. And they're like, holy crap. Let's start to tank after the first month of the season. Thibodeau might run him into the ground. However, I see the Knicks seeing dollar signs in their eyes.
All right. So can I make the counter argument here?
Go ahead. Make a counter argument.
I'm not in complete disagreement with you that that could very well happen, but there's one interim step that would have to happen prior to New York falling into that we're not tanking yet tier. And I feel like what would have to happen is Tibbs would have to be fired. So they'd have to get off to a really slow start, or they'd have to get off to a start that somehow you could justify firing Tibbs. Maybe it's the fact that Tibbs continues to play Julius Randle and Evan Fournier 40 minutes apiece, and Obi Toppin and Quentin Grimes and Emmanuel Quickley, that these guys are only playing 12 minutes a game. Then you fire Tibbs, and now suddenly you're within range of we're going to tank. As long as Tibbs is the coach, I don't see that team folding, tanking, unless the front office just pulls the plug and is like, hey, man, there's like seven guys with hamstring pulls on this team that aren't going to play, and Tibbs is playing with G League players. So I think they'd have to fire Tibbs in order to get into that tier, at least in my opinion.
Okay.
All right, give me your other team.
The Portland Trailblazers. I think that team is trash.
Okay.
Dame is going to get hurt. And that who are they relying on? I just don't see it. I don't see it.
All right, so here's where I think your approach and my approach were different. And I think we can both make a pretty coherent case for the tier that we put them in. So your case for that is that Dame, coming off an injury, could very well get hurt again. And if he does, that puts Portland firmly into tank mode. So what I tried to do was I sort of discounted injuries, and I tried to look at where this team is, or where any team is right now in this moment, if they stay completely healthy. Because if you went with injury, I felt like there'd be a lot of teams that would be changing tiers. So I tried to go with, okay, what's the best version of this team, or the healthy version of this team? At least let's put it that way. So with Portland, I felt like if you have Dame and you have Anthony Simons, who's a young player who's continued to get better and has shot the lights out from three-point land the last two seasons, they added Jeremy Grant. You still have Nurkic. You have Josh Hart. They have enough pieces that...
All those guys you just said are injured often.
They are. I agree. But like I said, I tried to go with the idealized version of they're not going to go down with injury, because if I started looking at injuries, then there was just a ton of things that I could do with lots of other teams. So that's why I put them into they think they can host a play-in game. I think if you have Dame Lillard and you have a healthy Dame Lillard, I don't think that you're going into tank mode if you have healthy Dame Lillard. Now, if Dame gets hurt, then that becomes a whole nother thing. So it also depends on how you look at the titles of the tiers, right? Because clearly what I'm saying is if you look at the title of the tier that you put them in, we're not tanking yet. Well, clearly, if Dame gets hurt, they're not tanking right now. But if he does, they're going to be tanking. And I think you could probably say that all the teams that I have in the hosting a play-in and the we're not tanking yet are all teams that could very well end up in the tankathon at the end of the season. So my other two teams that you had, so go ahead, make more. I don't know if you had more of a case to make in for the Blazers.
No, I just don't see how that team, once again, they're going to see their position in the West. And I mean, I guess when you look at all the other teams that I have in the tankathon, when four of those teams are the Western Conference team, it's going to be kind of hard. They'd be fighting for that like 11th spot to be the first one out. And they are the only Western team I have in this. That's kind of why I put them there. I just feel like they're not tanking yet, but they're not in this league of the other 10 teams. I mean, and that's with the Lakers in there too. I mean, yikes.
Okay, so let me hit my two teams. So I had the Pistons in this category that we're not tanking yet, and I also had the Wizards. So I think both of those teams are in position right now, today, in the middle of October, that they both are going to try to win games. I think Detroit is going to try to win games, and I think Washington is going to try to win games. But I think those two teams, as the season wears on, if it becomes apparent that they're not going to get in a position where they could be in the play-in or host a play-in, or they're fighting for the last play-in spot where they might have the right to play one game against probably, there's eight really good teams, I think, in the East, again, barring injury. I don't think that the Pistons or the Wizards are going to provide much resistance to any one of those eight teams, whichever of those teams in the East falls into the 7 and 8 slots. So to me, there's going to be decisions made by these teams that are close to the play-in bubble that in previous years or in other years where maybe you didn't have a prospect like Wembanyama, or maybe you just had a team that really, for whatever reason, felt like they needed to win and get playoff experience. I think this year, if you're close, I think you're going to see teams sliding and going the other way. So to me, I think Detroit and Washington are going to go into the season with the idea that we want to try to win, but if things don't go well, or even if things do go well, which for each of those teams might be slightly different, but going well is probably fighting at best for those 9 and 10 play-in spots. If you're Detroit, so let me ask you this. If you're Detroit, right, you got all these young guys that are going to play, and they're going to play a lot, and you're going to have the ball in Cade's hands. You're going to see what you got in Jaden Ivey. You're going to see what you got in Jalen Duren. You're going to see if Isaiah Stewart's a long-term piece. You're going to see if Marvin Bagley is going to fit in. So you got all these things that you have going on. Maybe you find that out in the first 60 games, and then after 60 games, the last 20, all of a sudden guys start going down with injuries, and you're bringing up two-way guys, and you're signing somebody out of the G League. And to me, I could see a lot of teams in that boat where it's almost like they play a 60-game regular season, play as hard as you can, try to compete, and then, hey, last 20 games, let's just shut it down and make sure we're in the lottery and get a chance for these guys.
Okay. So what are we moving to move on to the next tier now, Mike, or is there anyone?
Sure. No, let's do it. We
can host a play-in game. I guess I'll share who I have on this.
Yeah, list. You start this
so
one.
So I have Detroit because I think that Detroit can host a play-in game just because I think Cade is good enough. Like if a team drops for whatever reason out of the play-in situation or out of the top and drops in the bottom, I think Detroit can pop up there. The other teams, I also have the Wizards there. Once again, they could host a play-in game if everything goes right. I'm not saying that they will. I'm saying I think the Wizards, pie in the sky, they do have Bradley Beal on their team. You know, we've been Bradley Beal haters at times on this podcast. I understand that. But they could host a play-in game. I have the Kings can host a play-in game. You haven't said the Kings yet, right?
I have the Kings and host a play-in game, yes. I have them there.
I have the Pelicans in the play-in game.
Ooh. All right. Okay. I don't have the Pelicans there.
You don't have them in the conference. Give me a break. All right. And then you love Zion too much. And then I have the Bulls in the play-in game purely because they're down for me this year. They're down because of Lonzo. Another year into. I mean, I can't see this team. That team competing with the other teams in the East. Sorry, Bulls.
All right, so let's go one at a time with the teams that we agree on this. So we only have two in this tier.
Oh my God!
That we only have two that we agree on.
Okay, go ahead.
I have five. I have five teams.
Oh, that means
in here.
That means you have the Lakers in there.
I have five teams in here. So we already talked about the Blazers. So I have the Blazers in here because I think the Blazers can host. I think there's 11 teams in the West that can be in the quote unquote play-in. You know what I mean? That can potentially qualify for the expanded playoffs, however you want to look at it.
Okay.
So I have the Blazers and the Kings both with the ability to host a play-in game because I think could they sneak ahead of team 7 or 8? I think if things go perfectly, I think both of those teams probably believe that they could get to the 7 or 8 seed if they had to. That if things go well. So Portland, we already talked about. Sacramento, if you look at what they have, they're going to have a pretty good offense. You look at De'Aaron Fox, you look at Sabonis, you look at their pick and roll game, you look at what each of them can do offensively. Those are two good offensive players, good, well above average NBA offensive players. Now, defensively, whole nother story, but offensively, they're both really good players to build a quality offense
around. You're forgetting the biggest thing, though.
What's that?
Mike Brown's the head coach, baby. Let's go.
Right. So I'm getting to that. So let's jump ahead to that. So they hired Mike Brown. And if you remember Mike Brown here in Cleveland when he was first hired here in his first stint, and that was early in the LeBron years where LeBron, in all honesty, wasn't taking defense very seriously. Neither were any of his teammates. And Mike Brown came in and he got that situation completely turned around where he demanded that guys play defense. If they didn't play defense, they found themselves sitting on the bench. And if Mike Brown can coax a average defense out of the Sacramento Kings, then they're going to have a legitimate chance of certainly being in the play-in tournament at seed 9 or 10. And if things go better than expected, maybe they get up to that 7 or 8 slot, depending upon what goes on in front of them with injuries and other things. Now, all this is being said with the caveat that it's Sacramento, but when you look at what they have offensively, I just think with Harrison Barnes, with Kevin Huerter, they have pieces that are going to be able to allow them to score and put the ball in the basket. Keegan Murray is going to be a really good rookie. Defensively, Davion Mitchell can bring something to the table. They have the workings of a good NBA offense. And if Mike Brown can bring them competency on defense, then this team's going to be in the mix. And look, the nice thing for Sacramento this year is the four teams at the bottom of the Western Conference are not going to be competing at all to try to get up into that same position. So you're talking about, at worst, in my opinion, Sacramento is going to finish 11th in the Western Conference, which is one slot out of the play-in. So you're basically telling them you have to overachieve one slot in order to make it into the play-in tournament. And that seems doable for this team. It really does.
Okay.
Bulls. Talk about the Bulls.
I just don't, like, the whole Lonzo Ball knee injury, I feel like this team didn't add anyone that important, not that I can think of. I'm not really sold on their coach because I don't really believe in Billy Donovan. I don't know. DeMar DeRozan, I know he's great, and he was a great player last year. It's just something about the Bulls. Like, I can't see them. I can't see them. They can't win. They can't imagine that they think they can win. And I don't see a snowball chance in heck that they're in the conference finals. So that's why I put them here.
Like absolutely.
Like everyone has to get. I mean, the way that they get to the conference finals is like every other team's best player gets injured. Like, yeah, legitimately.
There's no way the Bulls are making it to the conference finals. I think when you look at how they started the season last year, when you had Lonzo and Caruso and they were wreaking havoc defensively in the backcourt, and you got a career year out of DeMar DeRozan, is it likely that he's ever going to play better than he did last season, plus all the clutch baskets that he made? Seems highly unlikely. Now, maybe he approaches that performance, but seems unlikely. LaVine's coming off the knee problems that he had all of last season, so who knows what you're going to get from him. Vucevic is on the backside of his career and his effectiveness. I think if you're the Bulls, the one addition, who's not really an addition, but the guy who was out last year with injury is Patrick Williams. And I think the Bulls have been high on his potential with the fact that maybe he can become a two-way star. But anybody counting on that based on what we've seen from Patrick Williams to this point in his career, that's a pretty long leap to go from a guy who has barely contributed in his first two seasons to being a guy who's going to single-handedly make a huge difference in a conference that's as difficult and as improved as the Eastern Conference is this season. So I just don't see how the Bulls possibly get out of the play-in. I mean, there's no way in my mind that they can even think about sniffing the sixth seed unless you said, as you said, that there's major, major injuries and problems with teams ahead of them. So I see the Bulls definitely being a team that they're going to be, if things go well, they're going to be in the play-in. If things don't go well, maybe one of those teams that we mentioned in the previous tier sneaks up and has a better year than people think and is able to take one of those spots from the Bulls. But I don't see the Bulls having any chance of, to be honest with you, I don't see how they even win a playoff series, let alone make the conference finals.
Okay. The reason I have the Pelicans here, Mike, is once again, they can't win. They may think they can win, but they can't.
Okay. And
the conference finals, everything has to break. I kind of put them in the same spot as the Bulls. I can't see them getting to the conference finals. I mean, that would mean that getting to the conference finals, that means they either had to get through the Warriors, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Suns, the Mavs, the Grizzlies. Like, that's too many teams. I just can't even imagine everything breaking right. Not to mention, I didn't even say the Wolves.
Okay, so can I make the case for this? And again, part of it is I think just the way we approached the question was slightly different. I think that accounts for some of our disagreement here. So when I'm looking at the Pelicans, when I'm looking at what they did last year in pushing the Phoenix Suns to six games. Now, granted, the Suns melted down in the next series against the Mavs, but the fact remains that Phoenix won 64 regular season games and New Orleans pushed them pretty hard without the guy who clearly is their best player. And their best player has come back. I'm going to take a huge leap of faith in my exercise of doing this and say that Zion Williamson is going to be healthy and he's going to play 65 to 70 games. Is that a huge leap of faith? Absolutely. But as I said, I tried to approach this with the idea that the teams as they are today were going to be healthy, because otherwise then it just made it too complicated for me. So if you're sitting in the room in New Orleans and you're David Griffin or you're Willie Green and you're looking at your team and you have Zion and you have Brandon Ingram, who's proven himself to be pretty close to being an all-star player. I mean, I think at this point, Brandon Ingram is a guy who he's going to be right there in the mix year in, year out to be an all-star. You got CJ McCollum, who is older, but he's a guy who, because of his ability to shoot the ball, because of the fact that he's played second fiddle to Dame for so many years, he's a guy who kind of understands sort of the role that he plays on this team. You got Herb Jones from a defensive standpoint. You got Larry Nance as kind of the Swiss Army knife guy. You got Jackson Hayes as the energy big coming off the bench. You've got Valanciunas down there looking to score and put points on the board. You got Alvarado causing havoc for Chris Paul in the playoffs. I think this team, the best version of this team, are they as good as some of those teams that you mentioned a second ago that are above them in the standings? No. But again, if all goes well, so now I'm discounting injuries for the team I'm talking about, but thinking if something goes wrong with the teams ahead of them, the Pelicans have the talent and they have the star power that they could get there if everything were to go perfectly. Do I think they will? No.
My view on it, though, is they're going to probably host a play-in game, right? Like,
Are you asking me? Can they crack the top six?
Is it more likely that they host a play-in game, or like more likely that they? I don't know. I guess once again, this goes back to how we approached it differently. I guess.
But yeah, I guess I was thinking about what's that team sitting there when they're having internal meetings and they're sitting down, they're thinking, where are we as a franchise? That's kind of where my thought process was, and I think if you're New Orleans, you believe that you can do more than host a playing game. You think you can go a little bit further than hosting a playing game. I think
hopefully CJ loses that weight.
Maybe. I guess we got to actually look at something more than a still photo and see where CJ's at. I haven't heard a lot of rumblings that he's out of shape. So maybe that was just some sort of camera distortion or somebody trying to put some slander on CJ, but look, I don't think the Pelicans are going to make the conference finals, but I do think that this is a team that could win a lot of regular season games, and I would not be stunned at all if they are in one of those top six seeds.
So here's my question, Mike, and I don't want to like jump all the way ahead. If you're thinking of the mindset of what the teams can do, then you have to have had the Lakers in the we can win the championship, because they clearly think they could win the championship. I'm just saying, if that's the way you operated all the way through this exercise.
No. Because here's why. So let me give you the difference. If I inject David Griffin with truth serum, David Griffin is going to say he thinks we can be a top six seed in the Western Conference, right? Don't you think?
Yeah.
If you inject Rob Pelinka with truth serum.
He's going to say that.
He's going to say he thinks his team can get to the conference finals.
Yeah, I have. That's what I...
Behind closed doors with no repercussions saying that.
If everything goes right, yes. I have them in that sphere.
Then he is ridiculously delusional. Now, goes back to our Pacers discussion, right? If the Lakers trade Russ... And those two.
Well, that's really why I have them. That's what, when I said it, when everything goes right, we can get to the conference finals. That requires the Russell Wilson needs to be traded and retired too, based on the Denver Broncos situation. Yeah. But Russell Westbrook's traded and they picked up something good, like maybe Miles Turner or maybe Buddy Hield or like those additions by subtraction, getting rid of Westbrook and picking up players that can play that aren't just going to be garbage. Like, if everything goes right, can they make the conference finals? The answer to that question is yes. That's why I had them in there.
Okay, so I discounted the fact that they hadn't made the trade yet, and that's why I had Indy in the we're not tanking yet category, and it's why I have the Lakers in we want to host a play-in game. Because this Lakers roster, the way it is currently constituted, there is no way that this team is going to get a top six
seed. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, there's no way. But if they make the Miles Turner Buddy Hield trade, I think now you can say that I still don't think I would favor them to make the conference finals, but they become a much more dangerous team to play. And they're a team that nobody would want to see in the playoffs if AD and LeBron are healthy and playing at their best. Right now, with this roster, you could have LeBron and AD playing at their absolute peak, and this team's not going anywhere. But if you add Buddy Hield and Miles Turner to this team, and you get peak AD and the best version of 37-year-old LeBron, now you're talking about a team that could win multiple playoff rounds. I don't think they're a championship team, but they could certainly get to the conference finals. So I agree with you from a standpoint of the way you approached it. I think you're probably right. But looking at the roster as it is today, I think their ceiling is hosting a play-in game with the team that they have right now. So that's kind of where I was there.
Okay.
So that's all. So my host of play-in teams, again, were the Knicks, Lakers, Bulls, Blazers, and Kings.
Okay. Conference finals.
Okay.
Lakers, I already talked about, so I said my piece.
All right.
Your Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yes, I have the Cavs.
I have the Atlanta Hawks.
I have the Atlanta Hawks.
I have the Toronto Raptors.
I have the Toronto Raptors.
And I have the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I have the Minnesota Timberwolves. So we're in agreement there, except for I have the Pelicans in there, and you had the Lakers.
So we flip up. So, I mean, we can go through each of these teams really quickly.
Sure.
I think we've talked Cavs at nauseam, so I don't really feel like we need to talk about the Cavs. Is there anything you want to say? We've talked about them at nauseam. So,
I think the Cavs upside, if this thing works and if Mobley's as good as we all think he's going to be and he could stay healthy and get this ankle back in shape, I think this team has a legitimate chance to give the teams ahead of them a huge scare, because I think offensively they're going to be just that good, and Allen and Mobley protecting the basket are going to be a lot to deal with. And the question is this team young? Can they coalesce quick enough? And as I've said over and over again, I think ultimately this team gets to their ceiling when Mobley's their best player, and I'm not sure that this is the year that happens, but this team's going to be good. They're going to be really good. And by the time the spring rolls around, if they're healthy, nobody's going to want to play them in the playoffs because they're going to be a bear to deal with.
Yep. All right. Atlanta, theoretical Atlanta, they can get to the conference finals if everything breaks the right way. Once again, adding Murray to Trae Young, I mean, that's a pretty dangerous combination. I am a little more down on them. I've been hearing some murmurs that maybe things are not going as smoothly. I don't know. I think it was Simmons was talking about that last week. He didn't feel on the low post. Simmons was on the low post. Did you listen to that episode, Mike?
I did, yes.
So I feel like he was talking a little bit about that, and just like the more he looked at it, he didn't feel like it was good. And then he had been hearing some murmurs about things not coalescing as well. But I still think potential. I'm not going to say that Trae Young and DeJounte Murray cannot take the Atlanta Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals in a theoretical possibility.
They did it 2 years ago, right?
They did. Arguably, the team was not as good as it is now, right?
Correct. I agree. So that's
the approach that I took. So
yeah, I agree. That's why I put them in that tier. I think
Do I think they will get there? The answer is no. I think the Cavs have a better chance than they do.
But, I agree.
Okay.
Good. What Trae did 2 years ago in the playoffs was pretty spectacular. And I think the question still remains, can you get it all done with Trae as your best player, as a guy who really isn't giving you anything on the defensive end of the floor? And that remains to be seen, but I'm dubious that formula is going to work until you at least get Trae Young giving a little bit better effort on the defensive end of the floor. I just think that you have to put them here because of what they did 2 years ago, but I agree with you. I think of the teams that I have listed in here, I think they're the least likely team to get to the conference finals out of the five that I put in there.
All right. Toronto, I mean, they continue to do well. Of Siakam, Van Vliet, and they work well together. I mean, Nick Nurse is a great offensive coach. I'm giving him too much credit, but once again, they hang around every year. They do well. When people start doubting them, they rise up and they do well. So I'm not going to put them in the play-in situation. I think they could make, in a theoretical, everything goes the right way, kind of like Atlanta. I also think Toronto's not as good as the Cavs. Theoretical chances are of getting to the conference final, but I still think they can get there.
Toronto has a bunch of multidimensional 6'8 to 6'10 dudes that play a lot of defense and make it really difficult for you to score. And Van Vliet is a proven offensive player who can get you big buckets despite the way it might appear from his size. He's a guy who has gotten it done at the highest level. Back when the Raptors won the title in 2019, Van Vliet was clearly the second best player, second most important player behind Kawhi on that championship team. And then you look at Siakam kind of bouncing back from sort of the bad spell that he had there for a little while, and he came back and was more like the Siakam of old last season, made third team all NBA. Scotty Barnes is only going to continue to get better. I don't know if we know exactly what he's going to be yet, but I know he's going to be something. I know he's going to be a menace on defense, and I know that offensively he's a guy that's going to do lots and lots of different things to help your team and make it better. So I think Toronto is going to be good. They're another team that I think is going to be not very much fun to play against. Nobody's going to be excited, be like, woohoo, we get to play Toronto tonight, because they're going to make it really difficult with the way they defend. And as you said, Nick Nurse does a great job on both ends of the floor of having them ready to play. So I think Toronto, things would have to break right for them to get ahead of some of the teams that are above them. And I don't think they're as good as the Cavs. I'd put them above the Hawks. Probably I'd go Cavs 1, Raptors 2, Hawks 3 of that group.
I agree with that in terms of
the Eastern Conference. So that's where I stand on Toronto. And then our last team is the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and I, once again, this just goes back to Anthony Edwards and his rise. I think the Wolves have a chance, especially with did you see the picture of Kat and Rudy Gobert with their shirts off standing next to one another?
No, I missed that one.
Oh, dude, Rudy Gobert makes Kat look like a little like a speck when he's standing next to him. And
I was surprised by how there was a picture I saw of it was, I think it was D'Angelo Russell, Gobert, and Anthony Edwards. And you forget, like, I think of Gobert, I think, as a real skinny dude. And then when you see him, you're like, yeah, he's really not that skinny. It's just that he's, whatever, 7'3".
Yeah.
And just, but that guy, he's in tremendous shape. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So I think that team, if everything goes the right way and they really like work well together and coalesce, and maybe there's a move to make for them. I don't know what that move would be. And they may need one more piece to really get to that conference finals thing. But if everything breaks right, like say they get the Suns in the first round, we've seen the Suns possibly collapse in the playoffs maybe once or twice, and then in the second round they somehow get the Grizzlies. Like, if it breaks that way, could you tell me that the Wolves beat both those teams and get to the conference finals? I think so. I think they could.
If Anthony Edwards continues his development, and we've said it just like with the Cavs, that Mobley can become your best player, when Anthony Edwards is clearly your best player, and I think he was probably close last year, and I'd say there's a good chance that this year he overtakes Kat as the clear alpha on this team. And he's really good. And the question is, can he do it at whatever he's going to be, 21, 22 years old? Is he good enough to take this group to the conference finals? I wouldn't bet on it, but I'm not sure I would feel super good about betting against it, because Gobert automatically is going to give you a great defense. I mean, it's just reality. In the regular season, they're going to have a great defense. And then you look at their high-end offensive talent. Say what you want about D'Angelo Russell, but he's a good offensive player. And everybody thinks Anthony Edwards is going to be a top 10 guy in the league. And Kat is the self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man in history. And whether you believe that he is or he isn't, the fact is he's a really good offensive player. And this team's going to be really good. And I think if Edwards gets a little bit beyond what people maybe think he's going to, so let's say he becomes a top 10 player in the league, which is probably a little bit ambitious, but he's going to get there eventually. And maybe he gets there a little bit sooner than people think, and they could get to a conference final if things break right.
Yep. All right. So I think at this point, Mike, Do we have the same teams in the top two bracket? I think we do.
We do. Yes. There's. I don't think we have any disagreement. I mean, we may have disagreement in which tiers these teams fall into.
The next tier, I have seven, and you said you didn't have any more than six. So I think one. So that means you have five in the top tier.
I have five in the top tier. Although, to be honest, it was really hard to.
I'm going to guess it's an Eastern Conference team that's in the top tier that you're talking about that is your fifth team in.
I would say yes to that question, but I didn't necessarily even feel good about. I don't necessarily feel good about any of the picks except for maybe two, and even then I'm a little dubious. So let's go with the seven. I'm sure that six of these seven we are in complete lockstep.
Sixers.
So go ahead. Yes, absolutely.
Grizzlies.
Yes.
Heat.
Yes.
Nets.
Yes.
Suns.
Yes.
Celtics.
No.
Oh, Mike. So that's your team that was the borderline team.
Yes.
So then my other two teams are the Mavericks.
Yes.
And which one did I not say?
You got them all.
The Celtics were your we can win. I don't think there's any chance they win after everything that's happened. I'm not buying it.
Okay, so let me make the case for the Celtics. I don't think we want to belabor the point because we've talked about it a lot. I think the case for the Celtics is you look at what they did in the second half of the regular season last year. The counter argument is you have the Udoka coaching fiasco, which is clearly going to have an effect on them. What effect it has, who knows, but it's clearly going to have some kind of an effect. So that's a negative. The Robert Williams injury and subsequent return at some point, is he diminished? Does he continue to have problems with that knee? He was a very important part of what they did last year. If they don't have him, and if they don't have him at full capacity at ever this season because of the knee, that's going to be a huge problem. I do think that the Malcolm Brogdon thing, which again, this is another case where Malcolm Brogdon over the course of his career has been injured probably as often as anybody in the league in terms of being nicked up. Now, maybe not major serious injuries where he's out a year and a half, but he's a guy who misses 10 games here, misses 20 games here, misses 15 games here. But Malcolm Brogdon is a guy that if you plug him into some of the lineups that we saw for the Celtics in the playoffs where they struggled to create offense, Malcolm Brogdon solves a lot of those issues and gives you some playmaking, gives you a guy who gets to the rim, gives you a guy who shoots like 90% from the free throw line. He can knock down threes. He's a guy that any contending team in the league would love to have on their roster. So you add him to basically bringing back everybody from last season once you get Robert Williams back. To me, although I'm dubious that they really are going to win it, I think when I looked at these tiers, I'm dubious. Really, there's only one team I feel like if they're completely healthy that I feel really confident in. And I'm sure that anybody who's listened to the podcast knows which team that is. But the other four teams that I have in that tier, including the Celtics, there's a lot of ifs that go along with each of those other four teams for me. So that's why I had the Celtics up there, because I think the Brogdon addition, if he's healthy, Malcolm Brogdon makes them a lot better. And I just looked at the East and I had said I couldn't see. Well, so let's look at the other Eastern Conference teams that we both have in this. We think we can win it, but we really can't. So the Nets, I mean, whatever. The theoretical on paper Nets, fine. You want to tell me Durant's an all-time top 10 player? You want to tell me how great Kyrie is? You want to tell me that Ben Simmons was the number one pick and he fits with shooting around him and you have Joe Harris and Seth Curry and all these guys? Sure. But
come on now.
The personalities and the whole circus there, there's no way the Nets are coming together to win the title. So let's throw them out. The Sixers, we've been over it ad nauseum. You have James Harden on your team and you're counting on him to come through in big moments.
But he's in the best shape of his career.
Look, to get you through, he's been in better shape, I'm sure, in Houston. And to get through four playoff rounds
last year,
to get through four playoff rounds, counting on James Harden, I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't think it's going to happen. The guy has been someone who disappears in big moments for his entire career. That is not suddenly going away at age 32 or 33. It's just not. So, sorry, Philly fans, you are not winning the title. Miami is what they are. Miami's going to be tough. They're going to be physical. They're going to play great defense. Jimmy Butler's going to do what he does. They don't have enough to win an NBA championship. There's no way. They might think in their mind that they have enough, but they just don't. They're going to be a very good team, but they are not going to win an NBA title. And so those are your three other Eastern Conference teams. I just don't see any of those teams having a legitimate chance to win the title. And Boston, to me, is one step ahead of those three teams just because they got to the NBA Finals last year and they added what I think is a potentially pretty important piece. But I would put the Celtics fifth in my next tier as far as likelihood to win the title.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I get it. I don't buy the Celtics. Sorry. I'll be honest with you, Mike. I think the Sixers have a better chance than the Celtics to win the title. Personally.
Really? Yeah, the only reason why I feel like the Celtics, why I put them there is because it felt disingenuous to only put one Eastern Conference team in there. And the three teams that we just talked about, I cannot foresee any scenario, any realistic scenario where any of those other three teams, where the Nets, Sixers, or Heat, I cannot foresee any realistic scenario where any of those three teams wins the NBA championship. And if everything breaks right for all four of those teams, Nets, Sixers, Heat, Celtics, to me, the Celtics are the one team that of that group of four that at their absolute best and their absolute realistic best that I could see winning a title. I don't see any of those other situations realistically resulting in an NBA title. So that's where I stand in the East.
Okay. And then looking at the West, like, the Suns, it's the whole situation's a fiasco. They think they can win the title, but clearly they show they're not able to do it in the playoffs. Chris Paul is probably going to get hurt. DeAndre Ayton's probably going to be pouting on the end of the bench. And then you got Devin Booker, who, I mean, he's been pretty good. And he was good in that series last year that they lost, but no one else stepped up. So I just don't see them winning it. The Mavs, listen, they lost a guy who was huge for them. And yes, Dinwiddie's been good, was good for them when he played, but they lost Brunson, and he picked up a lot of slack when Luka had to sit out or when Luka got in foul trouble. And while I think Luka's got a good chance, maybe I'm previewing my pick for the MVP this year here, but I feel like Luka has a chance at MVP. I just don't think that team can win the championship as they're currently constructed. And then Grizzlies, once again, you're relying too much on Ja probably and Jaren Jackson staying healthy and all those guys. Like I just don't see the Grizzlies winning the title. I think they probably think they can win it, and you know, but I don't think they can win it. They're not in that top tier for me.
All right, so let's start with the Grizzlies. I agree with you. I think Jaren Jackson being out at the beginning of the year is going to hurt them. I think when you look at the Grizzlies and you look at Ja as a superstar player, and then you look at the guys around him, your two and three are Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. To me, that's not a good enough second and third option to match up with some of the teams that we're going to talk about in the next tier. As great as Ja is, I don't think they have enough to be able to get themselves to the NBA title. They're good. They're going to play hard. They're going to win a lot of regular season games. They may even outpace expectations that people have for them this year, because I think a lot of us think that they're going to drop in the standings, finishing number two last year. They may outperform where you and I and other experts think they are going to finish in the regular season. But I think when push comes to shove in the playoffs, I just don't think they have enough offensive firepower to be able to hang with some of those other teams. And then Dallas, I think you made all the key points. You lose Brunson, who's your second best player. Luka, without question, is going to be unbelievable. If you're sitting in Dallas's front office, you're saying we can win the title because we arguably have the first or second best player in the league. And maybe that's enough, but I would bet against it because I just don't think the rest of that roster, again, offensively, I'm just not sure how they generate points. And Luka can only do so much. And in the last two playoff runs, he's done just about everything you could possibly have asked from him, and it still hasn't been enough. They're a guy or two short still of being ready to truly contend for a title. And then Phoenix, it's just a mess. The whole situation is, I don't even know what to make of it. Who knows what happened in that last game against Dallas last year? The Ayton situation, the way they handled the whole thing and the way they continue to handle it, seems like that's a powder keg waiting to happen. Chris Paul, as you said, is probably going to be hurt. He's another year older. You got the whole Jay Crowder situation. Are they going to trade him? Is he going to come back and play and come off the bench? Is he going to be disgruntled? Who knows? I mean, I think replacing him with Cam Johnson is probably overall an upgrade. But this strikes me as one of those situations that for this group to have gone through that experience, there's too many scars now. And I just don't think that that particular game, that experience against Dallas in Game 7, where you don't even show up on your home floor, that's going to stay with this team. And so I think this team, as currently constructed, is finished as a true NBA championship contender. Now, maybe you can move some pieces around eventually and rebuild this thing around Booker and Mikal Bridges or however you want to do it. But this group is not winning an NBA title. I think last year that Game 7 against Dallas cemented it. So
yep,
that finishes off that tier. So let's go to our final tier.
So, and you already talked about the Celtics, so that means that we have the other four teams we're in agreement. The Bucks, the Warriors, the Clippers, and the Nuggets.
So I think what we have here, where do you want to start? Which team do you want to start with?
Let's talk Bucks first, I guess. Let's get the Eastern Conference. The only Eastern Conference team that I have in my champ, my thing. Listen, do I have to say anything than Giannis? Literally, the other thing I would say is, I think that we can agree that if Middleton is healthy last year, they are in the finals last year, right? Right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question they're in the finals.
And they're giving the Warriors a run for their money, okay? And I probably still would pick the Bucks to win that series.
I agree.
So, you know, that means, like, the Bucks are the clear favorite in the East, in my opinion, and they have probably the best player in the NBA right now. He probably won't win the MVP because he's already won it a few times. But being Giannis, that is. So I just don't think there's only one little asterisk there, and his name is Mike Budenholzer. But we'll just leave him alone. We'll leave Budenholzer alone. He won a championship.
Bud's won a title, so we'll grandfather him in as a theoretical good coach. I still have some reservations, but he's at least worked his way out of where he was during the two seasons where the Bucks were going out early. Yeah, I think to me, this is the one team that, as I looked at it, and you start thinking about, with the caveat that the roster as it is now, with everybody healthy, to me, the Bucks are the best team. And they won the title 2 years ago. Giannis is only continuing to get better. I think you're going to see him play at an even higher level, if that's even possible, this season. And Drew and Chris Middleton, provided Middleton can get back from the wrist injury that he's out with right now and be healthy. Those three guys, with what they went through, both in the championship season and then when you think about what Holiday and Giannis went through last year in that Celtics series, it's a hardened, grizzled team that I think is going to be ready to come back and win the title this year, provided they can stay healthy. To me, they're the championship favorites, and they're the one team that I have the least questions about other than injury. All these other teams, I have questions about them beyond injuries. I think if the Bucks are healthy, they're the most complete team. They're the team that makes the most sense to me. They're the team that has the most experience playing together. And so I think the Bucks are the championship favorite.
Okay, I agree. The Western Conference, the Warriors, listen, like, can they win it? I think they can win it. There's the dysfunction now with the Draymond and Jordan Poole situation, which, I mean, I don't really know how much we want to get into this, but that punch was crazy, and then how it got leaked is crazy. I don't know. Did you see that? Supposedly it was some video guy, and TMZ paid him $2.4 million for the video. Did you see that?
I did not see that.
some like.
Is that video worth $2.4 million to TMZ?
I mean, it probably got enough traffic. Listen, TMZ has so much money, it probably was.
Yeah, I'm just asking. I mean, I have no idea. I have no frame of reference for whether that's.
I mean, how much do you think TMZ is worth?
I have no idea.
How much is TMZ worth? We're getting into the weeds here right now, but that's what happens when you talk for an hour or 10 minutes. TMZ was net earnings. It was sold for $50 million 2 years ago, but I mean apparently they have.
All right. Well, let's just say that's true. The guy's obviously throwing away his career if that comes out and it's found to be accurate. If that's really what happened, then that guy's obviously never going to work in the NBA again. So he has to go get a new career if this was his chosen career path.
Well, if you make $2.4 million, do you really need to get him?
Well, that's true. I agree. I'm not saying he made the wrong decision. I'm just saying that he has to find a new career. And maybe his career is being retired. I don't know. But regardless, that's not something that probably your dude – you can't do that lightly. That was a big thing to throw out there. And the punch itself – looked really bad. And clearly it was kind of like the Ray Rice situation. And obviously the Ray Rice situation, hitting a woman and all that stuff, far more egregious. But the fact that there was video of both of those situations, prior to there being video, it's easy to sort of talk your way through what it meant or what it looked like, or it was this or it was that. But as soon as the video comes out, it becomes a whole different story. And people punch teammates all the time. I'm guessing that on most basketball teams from the college level up to the professional level, that there aren't very many seasons go by where one guy doesn't punch another guy or there isn't pushing or shoving. But that situation where Green kind of walks up on him and it doesn't appear at all like you're getting into a situation where they're going to throw punches, and the fact that Draymond launches himself at Poole, I mean, that's pretty ugly. And the fact that Draymond is taking this whatever extended leave of absence, and who knows what that means or doesn't mean. And Draymond's always been a guy that's walked on the edge. He's a guy that, when I look at it from the outside, and again, I don't know what it looks like on the inside, and clearly he has things about him that are positive and things that have positively impacted that team. But man, like there's a lot of things about the guy that, I mean, I look at him and think about putting myself on that team and looking at some of the things he's done over the years. And man, I'm not sure he's been the greatest teammate. And I know he does a lot of things that they need and he's helped them win some titles, but he's also cost them a couple of titles. And who knows what this situation is going to end up being. You got his whole extension and whether or not he's going to get his money from the Golden State Warriors. Do they look to trade him? Do they let it play out the string? When does he come back? I think it throws a little bit of a cloud over this Warriors season, which going into it looked pretty rosy because you had the young guys coming up with Moody and Wiseman and Kuminga and all seemingly healthy heading into training camp and ready to contribute. And obviously Steph coming off his finals MVP and Klay another year removed from the two major injuries. They were set up pretty well to have a nice year to defend their title. And now there's just a whole lot of stuff that's been thrown in there that 2 weeks ago nobody would have thought was ever going to be a factor. So I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how long he stays away. My guess is he misses the first 10, 15 games of the season, and then they slowly work him back in from there. But I wouldn't be surprised if they trade him, to be honest with you.
I mean, that's a likely possibility, but
I don't know what his value is. What's his value? Like,
I don't know.
Does he have value to other teams?
No, I think he's a Warrior by the end of this. Because I don't think any teams. Right. I mean, there's only one team, Mike.
Lakers.
Yeah, 100%. But could you see the Warriors letting that happen? I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see Golden State trading him to the Lakers. That doesn't. Yeah. I don't see that. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
All right. Because the Lakers don't have anything that Golden State wants. They don't. Yeah. I mean, Golden State doesn't need those LeBron. Two first-round draft picks, and they certainly don't want Westbrook on their team.
LeBron.
So, yeah. Well, I don't think the Lakers trade.
Can't even trade LeBron anyway. So.
I don't think they're trading LeBron for Draymond. So yeah, they're not trading him anyway.
All right, the other two teams, the Clippers. We talked about this last week with Kawhi coming back and Paul George and Ty Lue, who's arguably, you know, one of the better offensive coaches in the NBA. Like, theoretically, the Clippers, if everyone can stay healthy and play enough games, I think we talked about that last week. I think they can win the championship. I'm not as high on them as other people. I probably have them third behind the Warriors and the Nuggets in this group, just because I'm not a Paul George believer. I'm a Kawhi believer. I'm not a Paul George believer. I'm more, and then I just feel like the Nuggets and the Warriors are better teams. Now, once again, I'll be happy to be proved wrong, because I actually wouldn't hate it if the Clippers won a championship, because I like Ty Lue. I rode on a plane with Ty Lue once, Mike. You nice. Know this?
Good work.
We were going to Disney World, and Ty Lue was on the plane with us.
All right, there you go. Did you step over him?
No. We were sitting. I was funny because.
It would have been really sweet if he would have had the middle seat and you could have reenacted. You said, "Hey, man, can I reenact the Iverson and step over you on the plane?"
He was in business, so this is what happened. So we walked back there, and we walked. He was sitting there. He was boarded first, and I just did a little head nod thing, you know, like the "What's up, dude? How you doing?"
There you go.
And he did it back, and then there was two seats in business open, and they offered it to me and Will. So Will and I moved up, and we were right next to him. And I wasn't going to say anything. Cause like, listen, these celebrities and people, like, they probably get so annoyed with people. And like, I didn't want to be obnoxious. I didn't even sneak a picture with him. I was thinking of trying to like put my phone in airplane mode and take a quick picture. But then I was like, you know what? I don't need to be a paparazzi guy. I'm not going to be that.
In the moment, he probably appreciated you.
Yeah. Yeah, for the 2 seconds that like he even thought about me. So, yeah, anyways, moment. But it was pretty cool that we rode on a plane to Disney, Florida with him.
There you go.
That was my little side Ty Lue story. I like Ty Lue a lot. I think you know, he's well respected, and I think I'd like the Clippers, but I think they're the third on this list. I think the Warriors and Nuggets have a better chance. Now, once again, the Nuggets are also dealing with coming back from injuries. To segue into them, and then you can talk about the teams. Like, there's lots of unknowns with the Nuggets. We've got, you know, Jamal Murray. We've got Michael Porter Jr. Like, are these guys going to be able to play and stay healthy? Who knows? But they have Jokic, and I feel like the Nuggets are in this tier as well. They could win it all if everything goes the right way and everyone's healthy. Once again, it's a big if, but just saying. That's why I have them here.
All right, I'll just say this about the Clippers. Kawhi's already proven that he can take a team to an NBA title, which he did with the Raptors in 2019. And obviously he won the finals MVP back with the Spurs when they beat the Miami Heat and LeBron James. So Kawhi's proven he can do it. And the roster around him, if he's at his best, that roster is good enough to win a title. I do have, just like you, I have some reservations about Paul George and his consistency in the playoffs. He's had some really big playoff games, and then he's had his Pandemic P playoff games. But the fact remains that Paul George is a really good talent, and he can come up big, and he could be the best player in a finals game. Now, maybe not night in and night out, but 2 games out of 7, could Paul George be the best player on the floor? I would say yes. And there aren't a whole lot of teams that have a second guy as good as Paul George and a first guy as good as Kawhi. So I think you have to take the Clippers seriously, again, with the caveat if they're healthy. And then as far as the Nuggets go, Jokic is an offense unto himself. He's become maybe the most unguardable guy in the league, which is saying something for a guy that's built the way he is and plays at the pace that he plays. But you talk about a guy that can shoot threes. You're talking about a guy that can meander his way to the basket. You talk about a guy that can post up and score. And then that discounts the fact that he might very well be the best passer in the whole league, regardless of position. And if you put him with a healthy Michael Porter Jr. and his ability to shoot the ball, you put him with a healthy Jamal Murray and his ability to shoot the ball, then you got Aaron Gordon to be able to deal with some of the better wings defensively. There's not many guys that physically match up with some of the best players in the league better than Aaron Gordon does. I just think this team really has the ability to play at a super high level, especially offensively. Now, can they build a championship defense, or at least a defense that's good enough to supplement what they're going to be able to do offensively? I think that's the big question. If you get the Michael Porter Jr. that people thought we were going to get last season when he finished the season 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, I guess, whenever it was, was that the bubble season where he finished it super strong and it looked like he was going to be a guy that was going to come in and maybe average 23, 24, 25 points a game. If you get that Michael Porter Jr., then you can make a case that the Nuggets are going to be the favorite to come out of the Western Conference. That's provided that Murray is back. I have more confidence that Murray is going to be healthy for the entire season than I do Michael Porter Jr., because his track record since he's been a high school player is that he just can't stay healthy. And once your back is an issue, it's hard to believe that that just completely goes away. So I'd love to see the best version of Michael Porter. And if you're the Nuggets, maybe you hope that you can squeeze one full complete season out of him in the next two or three seasons. And maybe that's the season that you truly contend for an NBA title. But I think the roster as it's constituted right now with good health, I think Denver has to be in this tier. And if I was going to rank these three teams right now, I'd probably put Nuggets 1, Clippers 2, Warriors 3. Only because I think the Draymond situation is, I think it's worse than it probably even looks from the outside, because there's got to be some ongoing tension from the whole Kevin Durant, Draymond blow up in Durant's last year there. And no matter what these guys say about the LeBron punch in 2016, that's still got to be something that lingers in that locker room with Steph and Clay. And no matter how much they say, we forgive him, that's still got to hold some weight. And I just think that's something that's, man, you see somebody just do that to a teammate, and I don't know how easy that is to just kind of push that under the rug, especially when the video's out there. So
yeah,
I'd put it Nuggets, Clippers, Warriors, and then to me I still think the Bucks are the favorite. And obviously we'll talk probably next week with all of our conference finalist picks and previews and all that, but I don't think it's any surprise that my favorite is going to probably be the Bucks.
All right. Well, we'll talk next week. We'll leave it on that. A little cliffhanger. Mike, I'll be honest with you. We're an hour and 20 minutes in this podcast. I don't even want to spend a minute on that other thing we normally talk about at the end. Okay. I want to just say, here's what I'm going to say. I was happy to be at Cedar Point all day yesterday and not watching any of the games.
Okay. I'm still going with my solution. LeBron, come by the Browns, move them to Akron. Let's make them the LeBrowns. Let's break the curse. Let's break the curse. And let's leave it there. All right. So we'll be back next week with some more NBA predictions. We will be on recording on Tuesday night, as we normally do. And we'll have two NBA games to talk about. And so we'll probably discuss those games briefly. And then we will get into some of our award predictions and NBA finalists and conference finalists and take some of what we talked about tonight in the tiers. And look
hopefully,
ahead to...
Hopefully the Guardians will be in the next round and they've beaten the Yankees.
Hopefully. That would be great. That would be fun. And that's baseball, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. The Yankees are a baseball team. I do know that. That's very good. Well, anyway, it'll be interesting. I did watch a little bit of Guardians baseball.
The 15-inning game?
Far more than I watched during the regular season, which was zero. So, and I will be watching some of this Yankees series for sure. So it should all be right. Fun. It's always an exciting time in the city when the Indians/Guardians have been in the playoffs. The city's excited. So it's a fun time to be here in Cleveland. So anyway, we appreciate everyone listening. Thank you. We are excited that you are a part of our Hoopheads Nation audience, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. 3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.